And the first issue on our agenda is you have an agenda. You might want to take a look at it. There's no committee meeting on Monday. And for those who are attending, there's a field trip to the Donald E. Long Juvenile Facility on Tuesday. So our next meeting, for the purpose of hearing bills, will be on Wednesday. With that, we're going to go into a work session on Senate Bill 183. Senator, well, counsel, why don't you tell us what we're doing?
Mr. Minister.
We're going, John. We're going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 183 is back before us. As you may recall, this is the bill that was sponsored by Senator Metzger and Senator Courtney. This is regarding Department of Corrections and their ability to have inmates in the Department of Corrections pay for their costs of care, and believe that before the committee is the bill, and there are four sets of amendments before the bill. And I don't know if Senator Metzger would like me to explain the amendments, or would you like to wait? Okay.
Remind me, counsel, is this the bill that the governor's office has amendments to?
Yeah.
And these are their amendments? Or?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the, this is the bill that we had a member of the governor's office here testifying. I think the committee, first of all, had some questions about after Steve Dole had testified about how this the cost of care and having the inmate pay for that. How is that dynamic work with the restitution that an inmate has to pay and the unitary assessments? I think that if you have SB 183-2 amendments, that is the amendment that I asked LC to draft to deal with the concerns raised by the committee, so that when the Department of Corrections is going through the assessment of an inmate's ability to pay, the DOC must consider the person's need for funds to pay for the support of person's children and to pay any monetary obligations imposed on the person as a result of the person's conviction. Again, that would encompass the unitary assessments, which are assessed to a defendant upon conviction, and I'm sure you're all aware those monies are then given to victims' funds and different funds to use to fund those programs, and then the restitution. So that was the one amendment that I asked for after some questions on behalf of the committee. Senate Bill 183-3 amendments, Mr. Chairman, are the ones that I worked with Scott Taylor from the Department of Corrections, and that was Scott Taylor was here with the gentleman from the governor's office, and that these are the amendments that they requested. And their concern in these amendments was to make sure that the Department of Corrections did not have to look at each inmate's situation and make a determination of their ability to pay. And this was a concern because I think the Department of Corrections realized very early on when working with with Senator Metzger was, you know, the large majority of inmates will not have assets to pay for their care. So that's an -3 amendments. And frankly, the -4 amendments, I don't know where they come from, and would, if there is a proponent that had LC draft those here, I'd love to hear from them, and I don't feel like I could adequately explain those at this time.
Okay. Can't explain them, we won't adopt them. All right. Senator Metzger, we're in work session.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think counsel explained them well. The -1 was requested. I don't think we clarified that one. Was that in the rare occasion that someone could be in the Department of Corrections and make a legal challenge for false imprisonment? We're not sure how that would happen in the Department of Corrections, and to actually be adjudicated in their favor and win a settlement, that the state then couldn't just take that settlement away and they therefore make themselves immune from falsely imprisoning somebody in the Department of Corrections. While that, we don't know of any such instance, that certainly would sound like a fair situation.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Metzger, I might be able to give some background on that. In other states that have similar bills or laws on the books where inmates are to pay for their cost of care, there have been one situation arose where a inmate won a federal claim against the prison for some civil rights violations, and the institution, once that claim was paid to him, then just attached that claim and said, we'll take that money to pay for your care, and the courts frowned upon that. This is an amendment that I believe Ingrid Swenson worked with Senator Metzger on to deal with a situation like that where it has been found that a person has been falsely imprisoned. I think that obviously policy-wise we wouldn't want then to set the Department of Corrections to say, okay, you've been falsely imprisoned, here's $3,000, and in fact we'll take that $3,000 because it cost $5,000 to imprison you.
Yeah, right.
So that's the idea. If that was a bit circular, that's because it is a circular idea, and I think that's what this amendment's trying to deal with.
And Mr. Chair, I said that was certainly fine.
And I'm assuming the suit that this inmate won was one relevant to false imprisonment for the imprisonment they were currently serving, as opposed to some other.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That is correct, and the concern was, as I stated, the policy of allowing the institution to do that after it's been found to have violated the inmate's rights.
Okay. Do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Do we do these separately?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 183.
Okay. Senator Metzger moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 183. Discussion? Any objections? Hearing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 183.
Senator Metzger moves the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 183. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none. So ordered. Senator Metzger.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend the proposed amendment, if we may do that. Would that be correct, Mr. Counsel?
Well, Senator Metzger, or Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, I was hoping that Mr. Taylor, Scott Taylor, was here because this was an amendment that I worked on with Mr. Taylor. And my concern when I read it from LC, if you look at the Dash 3 amendment, this, again, was intended to incorporate the situation where DOC does not want to have to spend money assessing the ability to pay of every inmate, because clearly, as we talked earlier and heard from Dale Penn and Josh Marquis and Steve Dole, most inmates will not have the ability to pay. It's going to be those unique situations where an inmate has assets, as Josh Marquis had mentioned, the case where the defendant had a $200,000 life insurance policy that paid out when he killed his wife, unfortunately, and that went into his own assets. My concern was I wanted to make sure with Mr. Taylor that you wanted the amendments the way they are, because I was concerned that the first portion of them, as they read, when the DOC has actual knowledge that a person confined in a department institution has substantial assets that are available and subject to collection for the full cost of care, I want to make sure that you wanted those amendments in there on behalf of the department. So,
come on up, Scott. Help us with this.
And specifically, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I wanted to make sure to ask Mr. Taylor, there may be a situation where the Department of Corrections has an inmate, knows that the inmate has assets, but does not want to go, proceed and take those assets to pay for cost of care. That was my concern. Is that true, Mr. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, Scott Taylor, Oregon Department of Corrections, that is correct. And I've looked at the adjustments you made in the amendment, and I think they work for us. Thank you for...
Right, just for the record, the intent of the amendment is to do what?
The intent of the amendment is to make sure that we have the ability to go and determine whether people have the ability to pay on a select group of people, that we don't have to screen everybody that comes through and go search their entire financial history, that we can act more selectively in finding those assets when we have knowledge to that effect.
Right. Now, I've got a couple of questions. Does the term actual knowledge, is that a higher threshold than just knowledge?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't think that that is a different... in law, you can be imputed to have knowledge. I think that it's just an... Senator Courtney?
Well, I don't mean to... May I suggest that there's a constructive knowledge and there's active knowledge, actual knowledge? I believe, Mr. Chair, you're talking about you got to have actual knowledge. You cannot be held to constructive knowledge, if you understand, Mr. Chair. And I know you understand that as a police officer, what I'm talking about. I believe that's what we mean by actual. The word actual does have a huge meaning it has a huge meaning.
What it means to me, and I could be wrong, is that you would have to have something in your hand that gives reason to believe that this person has assets, maybe a bank statement. It wouldn't just be somebody that says, hey, I think Bob won the lawsuit 3 years ago and he still has it in a bank account somewhere. Help me with this.
I think you're right given the fact scenario, Mr. Chair, you gave me, but I think that if there had been a major newspaper story on an individual who had won the lottery and it was general knowledge through the media that they had won the lot, I think that's an actual knowledge situation, short of having something physical in your hands. And I could be wrong, Mr. Chair, and Supreme and I learned counsel, but I'm trying to do the fact situation to try to flesh this out.
And the reason I'm doing this is because we have a P.G. Bowley case.
Right.
And if the court's looking at this and they're saying actual knowledge to the court means actual knowledge. And so if there is a specific legal term and meaning defined by that, I think maybe we need to know what that is.
And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I just want to make sure I understand what I think the DOC would like to not have to assess every inmate and make a decision on every inmate. Are we going to try to assess costs of care for this inmate? And I think there might be a better way to do that. I didn't mean to just take out the portion, but I know that that's the intent of Department of Corrections. And maybe I would probably be more comfortable to work with LC on dealing with what this amendment, proposed amendment, would do.
And one other issue, too, it also says substantial assets. And again, I'm not sure
what
that
does mean.
So as opposed to the assets. So, I mean, if you want flexibility, seems to me like words like knowledge without actual in front of it makes better sense, because that gives you the ability to judge a little broader, and just simply assets, and you can make a determination as to whether the assets are sufficient for the department to go after. And then the most important part is the may elect not to language. And that seems most important to me.
Mr. Chair, if I could, the council had a suggestion, I think, to address that issue. Maybe you could present that, what you discussed with Mr. Taylor on line four, to maybe solve all those issues.
Well, and my suggestion, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, was to basically delete the proposed amendment up to line four, the word "the," so the amendment would read, the department may elect not to investigate a person's ability to pay or elect not to issue an ability to pay order. But my concern with this, took a look at this morning, is that talks about department looking at the ability to pay. The real issue we want to look at is the department going to try to get the assets and is going to try to seek a claim against them. So I made that suggestion. I'm not completely comfortable with proceeding on it right now until I talk to LC.
Senator Mesker, would you be comfortable if we put this over?
Yes, absolutely. Let's do that.
I'd like to do that if it could. Just put it over till Wednesday until we clarify some of that language. Is that okay with you, Scott?
Yes,
no,
Chair.
No protest?
No. And, Chair, if I could just say I appreciate the conversation. Right. Some of the terminology that's in there came from both from legal counsel trying to help us draft this.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Scott. Appreciate it. And we'll close the public hearing then on Senate Bill, the work session on Senate Bill 183. We'll come back on Wednesday, the 21st, February 2001, to finish that discussion. And Right. Well, through the public hearing on Senate Bill 166. Now, is that Senator the young guy?
No.
No. 236. Okay, good. Because I promised him that.
This is easy.
Get out, buddy.
Your services are no longer required.
All right, counsel.
It's fairly cruel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill would create a cause of action for killing a companion animal. It would establish an age requirement for rabies inoculation. It changes some reporting to local health officials, and it clarifies the procedure and findings required before ordering a dog to be killed, and establishes a separate court proceeding with a separate appealable order.
All right. I am assuming that Rob, is it Bouvet, and Scott Beckstead, are you going to speak together?
Mr. Beckstead is actually Colorado, Mr. Chair.
For Scott, I'm
yes.
Sorry. You're first up. Are you the proponent of the bill, or is this your puppy?
Is this your puppy?
Supposed to speak? Not today.
That's it.
Okay. Just for the record, Mr. Chair, I introduced this bill on behalf of Scott Beckstead you were talking about, so what it's worth, I'll just put that on the record. So,
okay. So Scott, then, is the proponent in?
Correct.
Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding Senate Bill 166. My name is Rob Bouvet. I'm a lawyer from Lincoln County, and I'm here at the request of Scott Beckstead, who called me late yesterday afternoon. He's in Colorado now, and that's why he's not here today. I'm here to address generally what Senate Bill 166 does, but then to focus on one particular aspect that affects part of what my job is in Lincoln County as the Lincoln County Dog Judge. As counsel summarized, basically Senate Bill 166 is aimed at three things. First off, it's aimed at providing a civil cause of action for those against those who essentially wrongfully kill a companion pet. And I will leave that issue to some other proponents of the bill to discuss in more detail unless you have specific questions for me. That doesn't affect me directly in what I do in Lincoln County. The second significant thing that it does is it amends the rabies statutes to basically update them. Our rabies statutes are slightly overbroad in the sense that they technically require, for example, that a rabies vaccination be given to a dog that's, I believe, under 6 months old, where you can't give a rabies vaccine to those types of animals, as I understand it. And again, there are other proponents and experts on those topics that will talk about that issue today. The third big aspect of Senate Bill 166 is some fine-tuning and some substantive changes to the dog control law in ORS Chapter 609, and that does impact some of what I do in Lincoln County, also